This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, April 6th edition of Talk Back. Good morning, everyone. I'm Peter Christian. A Talk Back this morning is brought to you by our friends at Y West Storage. Secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. Give them a call today. These are all 406 area code numbers at 510-0590 to reserve your unit at Y West. Quality seamless gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call Quality Seamless Gutters 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment. Heavy duty truck sales, parts and service. The number 541-9097 for Bruckner's. Busy Bees Cleaning Service. Commercial cleaning you can trust. For a free estimate, call Busy Bees 550-3219. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service and sales. Call Pivots Plus at 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel Incorporated. Diesel repair, parts and service in Missoula. Call Gomer 728-7620 today. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Give them a call today at Harrington 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, good morning, and good morning to you, Mr. Nick Christensen. How was your Easter, sir?
It was good. How was yours?
Good. Just great. We had a massive Easter egg hunt on Saturday, and it was unreal up at the school by up on top of the hill there. And I will tell you, there were I was surprised, actually. I didn't realize I first thought it was just for our church, but it was for the entire community, and the whole area up there just showed up with kids, and it was a blast. And my wife and I had the privilege of laying out a whole bunch of Easter eggs that were filled with candy. You know what I mean? So, but that was really fun. We had a great time.
Nice. Yeah, we celebrated my niece's first birthday on Saturday.
Cool.
And then yesterday was her actual birthday, so she got kind of double duty there, and she had her own little Easter egg hunt by herself early, and then we always do an adult Easter egg hunt where we have little candies or, like, you know, money eggs or little liquor bottles that you can win and stuff like that. So we did that yesterday, and it was a lot of fun.
All right, good deal. So hope everybody had a wonderful Easter. It was a beautiful day, a nice blue sky and sunshine. It was great. I really appreciate everybody who held Easter egg hunts all over the city, whatever organization or church or whatever it might have been. I hope you all had a great time and a wonderful Easter. And a very meaningful Easter as well. So, but today is open phones for the first half hour. Is that right?
First hour.
And then at 9 o'clock this morning, one of our favorite guests, our friend Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, will be joining us at 9 o'clock. And he's got all sorts of things to share. He's already sent us a whole bunch of notes of the things that he is working on. He's a very busy guy. Author and researcher, and of course Rob Nadelson, a great friend of TalkBack, and we're looking forward to talking with him. But right now it is open phone, so anything that might be on your mind this morning for this first hour, give us a call, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. I'd love to know how your Easter went. Did you have an Easter egg hunt? If you have little ones, I'm sure you did. I'd love to know just how everything went out there. It was a spectacularly beautiful day. So if you'd like to call us and talk about whatever's on your mind, that's open phones for this first hour. We'll be right back after this quick timeout.
Spring. Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Partly sunny today with a high into the low 70s and light winds. Tonight we'll see partly cloudy skies and lows dropping to about 40. Tuesday looks to be mostly sunny but noticeably breezy. Winds picking up and shifting out of the west to about 20 miles per hour. We could see some gusts up to about 36. Tuesday night stays partly cloudy. Those winds will ease off late and we'll see lows down around freezing. From there, it's a sunny stretch near 58 Wednesday, 62 and sunny on Thursday.
Welcome back, everyone. Good to have you along on this Monday, April 6th edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. He's been busy the last couple of minutes. Lots of folks online, and Nancy is up first. Nancy, good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, morning, Gloria, and it certainly was a beautiful Easter Sunday. I have to share an experience. At 3 a.m., I awoke, and there was a moonbeam actually coming through my bedroom window right on my face. And I looked up, I looked up and saw this magnificent, spectacular moon of ours, and I thought I was dreaming at first. And it was just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And I was thinking, of course, about astronauts. And, we had an Easter egg hunt yesterday here in town and around us. It was at our city park, and the kids were just crazy with excitement.
You bet.
And I just want to share with everyone, since the 1960s, the Busy Bee Restaurant has been an icon here in town, coming into town. And it is being torn down. It's almost all gone. There's just a lot of debris around. But they actually unearthed a Fred Tressel painting of a cowboy and a bronco inside the restaurant that had been covered up. So the whole wall has been removed, and I'm not sure where they took it, because it is valuable. And Fred Tressel, of course, he was a local artist here in town, and he had a studio here as well. But just to let you know that I agree with our attorney general. That's wonderful. He's fighting against Gallatin County. We've talked about illegal immigration so much on the show. So kudos to our attorney general, and I support his efforts 100%. Other than that, everyone have a beautiful, beautiful week, and may beauty follow you always.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate that. All right. Thank you, Nancy. And Susan is standing by. Susan, good morning. I saw you yesterday, or Saturday, I should say.
You did. Boy, was... The Big Mac Church, where we both attend, was decked out in all its glory. And then I went to St. Francis, and St. Francis looked gorgeous. And all of the churches looked gorgeous. And then I went to Beehive Homes, and we had a darling We had a wonderful celebration for my 52nd wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
My husband, who lives at the Beehive.
Right.
Yeah, I was very lucky. And we had our grandchildren there, and we had a Easter egg hunt with money in it, because my kids are actually getting so old they want money. But it was really fun. Anyway, the reason, and today is my official 52nd wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
I was married in Colorado Springs. We have a very unpublicized school board election. It's not going to be a school board. It's going to actually be a levy. We have two school levies that are coming up in May, and it will raise your taxes. So if you want to raise your taxes, I encourage you to vote yes on them. If you do not want your taxes to go up, vote no. They are for your high school. I can barely read it because I have a printout of it, but it's in like 8-point type.
Right.
But it's for a high school levy. And it's for an elementary school levy. And they are printing... We should be getting them in the mail any day now.
Yeah, there'll be an information packet that comes along with it as well to let you know exactly what these things are all about.
Yes, but I will say to anyone who complains about their taxes going up, most of the reason our taxes go up is because of the levies and the bonds that are voted upon by the people who vote yes on the levies and the bonds. So if you do want your taxes to go up, keep voting for them. If you want them to go down, don't vote for them.
Well, it's not that the taxes will go down. It's not that the taxes will go down because the taxes will still be the same. But if you vote for the levy, your taxes will simply increase. And it's very important to read. Very, and as you know, Susan, it's very important to read those levies that'll be on the ballot, and the information stuff you'll be getting in the mail. I'm sure the school districts are being very proactive about letting folks know just why these are important.
Well, yeah, but if you are a property owner and you are watching your taxes go up, 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 and if you are a renter, you don't think that it affects you, but it does.
Oh, yeah.
Because property owners will pass the increases on to the renters. So anytime there is something on, anytime there is a levy and you vote yes to it, that means your taxes are going to go up. That's just one, I want people to know that.
Susan, thanks for the call as always, ma'am. Appreciate
okay.
it. All right, let's get Dave on the line. Dave, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, first about taxes. I mean, gas prices going up is a tax on everyone.
Right.
So, yeah, taxes are going up. But about the Iran war, I know conservatives really don't want to talk about it, but the core issue is the government of Iran. If we could get a government in there that was more congenial to us, that would be a good thing. But the problem is that, in my view, there's only really two ways to get rid of their government. One, a military general with the army might step in and make himself a dictator and kick out the religious nuts, or that the people take up arms and confront the government. The idea that somehow the people could go to the public, go to the government and say, pretty please, would you step down and let us have democracy here, I think is truly unrealistic. So, I mean, that's what we're facing here in Iran.
Even if they say, pretty please, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be, flippant about it, but it just... Yeah, we don't realize how fortunate and blessed we are in this country to be able to vote for things and have your vote count.
Right. You know, they had a big get together. Thousands, maybe millions of people stood up and said, "Please, we want government reform." And what did they do? They put bullets in 40,000 people.
Yeah.
So I mean, and so the people went home and are scared. How can we expect them to just, change their government by asking nicely? I mean, it's going to take force to get the religious nuts out, and anything less than that is, I think, unrealistic. And bombing the heck out of the country, destroying all their roads and taking out their water supply and everything is just going to make the public upset with us. I mean, starving the people is not going to be helpful for our cause. The government is the issue, and as far as the nuclear equipment, well, who knows where it is? You can say it's all buried in that one spot, but we don't know that for a fact. Our government is telling us that, but we don't know it. So, I mean, it's about government change, and I don't see a real optimistic position there.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. As always, we appreciate it. We're going to come right back. Ed and Jeff are both standing by. It is open phones for the first hour. If there's something you want to talk about, hey, give us a call at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we're going to come right back and get calls from Ed and Jeff and hopefully you right after this.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
75 years of research.
75 years of policy.
75 years of opportunity.
75 years of freedom.
This is 75 years of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Join us at mda75.org.
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. A big thank you to all the folks who are calling in this morning. We appreciate it. Let's get right back to it. And Ed, it's open phone, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, Peter. Last week, I think you mentioned that the U.S. national debt was $37
trillion. That's more like $38 trillion. But a trillionaire, a trillionaire, right? Go ahead, yeah.
$37 is so 2025. I was using that number, too, but the debt has zipped past 38,
oh,
and is now $39 trillion.
Lovely.
Okay, and here comes Trump's unbalanced one-year budget request. Is that $1.5 trillion? I think something. So it's going to be $39 trillion, but not for long.
What do you think we can do about that?
I knew you were going to ask that.
If anything, well, I'm always looking for solutions. Yeah. I wish somebody had one.
Well, okay. Well, what Trump wants to do is for the feds to fund only military. He said this in a speech, only Medicare, Medicaid, other health, education things, everything else besides military goes to the states. So Montana would fund Medicare, Medicaid types of programs. So all I know is that isn't going to work either.
Well, if we could have a commensurate decrease of federal taxes to help us to do that, that would be an interesting thing.
Well, one little thing is for things like Social Security, don't have a cap on your tax. Growing up, I guess, at one time, I got a waiver and didn't have to pay Social Security on my last paycheck of the year.
Okay.
And that happened only for one paycheck ever. So in any event, that's a little thing that could happen. Just keep the taxes rolling on everybody and no waiver at the end of the year.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Jeff is up next. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, gents. Good morning, Montana. Great article, Nick, on Gallatin County attorney. I'm really interested to hear that the Minnesota protests have come to Montana and that the Gallatin County attorney actually attended some functions in Minnesota to get the proper idea of what we should do to counter ICE. But earlier in the show, you had a couple of straw men posed that I want to knock down. First of all, conservatives don't want to talk about the war. I'm happy to talk about the war. I'm not pleased with the war. I don't think there was a good war or a bad peace, as Benjamin Franklin said, but sometimes war is necessary. That doesn't mean it's good. And the statement that no one knows where the uranium is. There's a bunch of people out there whose lives, thousands of people, tens of thousands, whose lives are dedicated to finding out specifically that kind of information, what's going on. And we in the public don't know. I wish I did. I wish I could still go out to an Intel terminal someplace and look at what's going on, but I don't get to do that anymore because that's not my job. But I know that we know more than what's being let on, and it's to say otherwise is just ignorant. I'm sorry. You don't know what you don't know, so to pretend that you do is nothing more than ignorance.
Well, the intelligence community is got to be protected, you know, has to be. You know, everybody can't know everything because then it would be a disaster.
Yep, there's a caveat you put on certain intel messages. And this isn't classified or anything. It's called WinIntel, which means warning, notice, intelligence sources, and methods involved. So when you see WinIntel, you know that if you let this go to anybody out in the public, you're going to compromise a source somewhere and maybe get them killed. So you don't do that. There's so many layers to it. To pretend that you can understand it is ridiculous if you've never been part of it. But I want to end with a tweet by Secretary Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. Until recently, Hamida Soleimani Afshar and her daughter were green card holders living lavishly in the United States. Afshar is the niece of the deceased Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani. She's also an outspoken supporter of the Iranian regime, who celebrated attacks on Americans and referred to our country as the Great Satan.
Wow.
This is a person who lived inside our country.
Yeah.
And took advantage, I think she was actually teaching at a school maybe, but anyway, well-funded and living the good life in the United States and condemning us. But Marco ended his tweet with, "This week, I terminated both Afshar and her daughter's legal status, and they are now in ICE custody, pending removal from the United States."
Wow.
The Trump administration will not allow our country to become a home for foreign nationals who support anti-American terrorist regimes. So I say that's a good start, and I hope that they do more of that. You know, the private speech of people who are not citizens is not does not come without restraints. If you are a alien, legal or otherwise, living in the United States, and you are so ungrateful for us giving you a place to live that you want to badmouth us and celebrate our destruction, I think you should leave.
Agreed.
So, what do you call those two? A good start? Let's keep it up, Marco.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Hey, we're up against a break. We have Lisa, Skip, Joe, and Harry all standing by. It's open phones from now until 9 o'clock. And then, of course, Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute will be joining us on the phone. So stay with us.
Looking. Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Partly sunny today with a high into the low 70s and light winds. Tonight we'll see partly cloudy skies and lows dropping to about 40. Tuesday looks to be mostly sunny but noticeably breezy. Winds picking up and shifting out of the west to about 20 miles per hour. We could see some gust up to about 36. Tuesday night stays partly cloudy. Those winds will ease off late and we'll see lows down around freezing. From there, it's a sunny stretch near 58 Wednesday, 62 and sunny on Thursday.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Open Phones on TalkBack. Let's jump right back in. The phone lines are almost full. Let's get Lisa up. Lisa, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Well, good morning. I want to make it a real short statement. To me, Easter, yesterday, the best news for me was when I heard that they found the airmen. I mean, from what I've been hearing, little tippets on the news, it must be a very frightful experience for him, laying up there, not knowing if they would find him, 7,000 feet up, no water, and hot as can be, and enemies looking for him. So when I heard that they found him, I said, praise the Lord.
Well, you bet.
And the other thing I wanted to say about this out-of-control budget, supposed to be coming down the pike from Trump, why don't we, or it would be nice if we could get all this fraud money back that they wasted in California, in Minnesota, and other blue states. We would have a lot of money for Medicare and Medicaid. But you know how that is. It's spent and we're not ever going to get it back. But that would be nice if we would have it.
Well, the whole thing about Minnesota, there was over $1 trillion, from what I understand. I don't think I'm exaggerating too much. Nearly or just over $1 trillion in fraud just in that state alone. And
California, yeah. It's supposed to be actually worse.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you.
You know, that's a lot of money that has been gone down the drain. And these people that stuck it in their pocket should have to pay it back.
Well, it's up to the voters of those states to get that done. So,
it'll never happen. But anyhow, it would be nice. But anyhow, you all have a good day.
And the same to you, ma'am. Thanks for the call. Skip is up next. Skip, good morning, sir. You are on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Peter. And it sounds like you had a wonderful Easter, and especially the Easter egg hunt. I wanted to tell you that. We had our Lincoln-Reagan dinner on Saturday evening.
Okay.
Here in Lincoln-Reagan-Trump dinner here in Ravalli County at the fairgrounds. And there were so many speakers. It all went very smoothly. It was wonderful to hear the contrast finally from different people that are running for different offices. And Dr. Al was there and Aaron Flint was there. And we had two speeches from our two people that are running for commissioner to replace Mr. Chilcott, who's retiring after 20 years. And then we had two senatorial candidates for 43 and then we had two more from 85 that spoke, and then we had Charles Walking Child was there to speak about the senatorial seat he's running for. I don't know if you've ever heard Charles talk or not. But the hit of the night was Colonel Ed Sperry, who said our prayer for us at the beginning, right before our national anthem. And Ed Sperry, good personal friend of mine, he just turned 98 years old.
Wow.
So we got him up on the stage, and he stood at the podium and said a wonderful, inclusive prayer. And then he said, as he was starting to walk away, he walked back to the podium. He said, you know, I want you to remember something about this, he called it the Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem. And he said, you know, the last verse is something that's so amazingly inclusive. It wraps up the whole song. And he stood there and he said, please listen to me. And he said the whole verse slowly of the fourth verse. And it just, everybody went nuts because they just loved it. And he made the hit. But it was nice to have such a nice get together, and the food was great. But I just thought I'd tell you about that. I talked to Aaron Flint for a little while, and also the gentleman that's running for Steve Daines' seat.
Right.
He drove all the way over from Billings to be there with his wife, and he spoke. And somebody you might know is one of I'm sorry. I'm just having a little trouble with my throat.
All right.
Meanwhile, one of the men named Matt Zacharias. I don't know if you ever met him.
No, I haven't.
He's on. he's going to be on Aaron Flint's team, I hope. But meanwhile, he was on our representative's team. And he was there. He brought his whole family. He doesn't live far from you on that side of Missoula.
Right.
And he had all his kids with him and his wife. And he was walking around all evening with his little brand new baby. And he's a guy that comes down. He's a liaison and for our representative. And it was just a very inclusive night. And, I know one thing that happened while I was talking to Aaron. I've seen him a few times now. And he said he always appreciates the questions that he gets on your program. He said, especially from Nancy. He said, and Nancy used to call into my program too. And so I just thought I'd tell her that too. So meanwhile, I just wanted to tell you, this was the kind of Lincoln-Reagan dinner you're supposed to have. And it worked really well, and we learned a lot. So thank you, and all right. Happy Easter.
Thank you, and the same to you. Thanks for the call. We're going to come right back, and we're up against a break. I want to give Joe and Harry and Rick all plenty of time to make their point. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout.
Blowing out your birthday candles should be easy, but if you have undiagnosed COPD, you may find yourself short of breath. Early diagnosis and treatment can add years to your life. If you have symptoms like wheezing or chronic cough, talk to your doctor and visit copdfoundation.org today.
Welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. Joe has been waiting the longest. Joe, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead, please. Hello, Joe. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just want to say that I heard what Donald Trump said about Medicaid and Medicare going back to the states just yesterday, and you know, they want more money for the military, and we do have a $37 trillion debt. But if the cities and the states like Minnesota, California, and Illinois, and a lot of them out east want to be sanctuary states and bring in all these people, then they should pay for it. And that's what Donald Trump says. So I couldn't agree more, and I think we're so blessed to have him as our president. And you know, the job of the federal government is to protect our country and the people. And let's not forget what we had to do to Germany to get them to quit. You know, we firebombed Dresden. We killed a lot of civilians. You know, it's very sad. But the fact that we're taking out Iran, I think, is going to be so historic. And like I say, I think we're blessed. And I think Ilhan Omar, as well as these relatives of Soleimani, may get deported too, because I think she lied on her application. So there's a mouthful.
All right. Well, we'll see. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it, sir.
Yeah,
and I believe Harry is waiting. Harry, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Peter. On the debt, I mean, it took Trump only 5 months, I think they said, to add another $1 trillion to the debt. So if he keeps going, boy, he might even do a better job and add it, you know, make the time next one will be only 4 months. So, you know, go Donald Trump, you know, he's really doing a good job on that. This number of fraud over in Minnesota, that's like, I keep hearing it's like the fish that got away. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Every time I hear the story, it's bigger and bigger. It's amazing how could I think they had like $19 billion was the dollars that they actually got the state. So that went up to $1 trillion now. That's amazing. That's amazing.
So
how that works.
So you think somebody's fudging with the numbers?
I believe so. I doubt if every dime that went over there went to fraud. I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot, but I mean, every time I hear it, it's, you know, like I say, now it's up to $1 trillion. That's amazing. That's, you know, better than a stock market. The numbers just keep multiplying without ever any proof.
Okay, well, here's what I have. I just pulled this up, just so it isn't just you and me yakking here. It says here, federal prosecutors and investigators estimate, again, that's estimate, that fraud across various Minnesota state-run programs could exceed $9 billion. This alleged massive systemic fraud spans multiple initiatives since 2018, including Medicaid and child nutrition programs, although Minnesota state officials have disputed the total amount, suggesting it is lower. So there you go.
Yes, you know, I mean, that's $9 billion. That's a whole lot different than a trillion, and
this
that's
true. Yeah.
That's estimated over from 2018. So I mean, again, you know, show us the number. I mean, I'm sure there's fraud, but you know, I like to see the actual hard numbers saying, okay, we got this, and this is how much was wasted. And it, you know, of course, fraud is terrible, and they should be rooting it out. But I mean, it's turned into a political thing, and so now that's, you know, especially since it's Minnesota and they had the protest there, so now we got to show how terrible they are. And you know, I don't, coming from our government at this point, I don't trust anything they say, and especially when it's such a political point, and you know, it's coming up in the election, so now we got, you know, everything has got to be taken with a grain of salt. And one more thing, the people keep throwing the derangement syndrome thing out there. I'm curious. We have a man, a full-grown man in his 70s, and somebody challenges him in a plant, and he says "F you" and flips him off. This is the president of the United States. This is someone who's supposed to
be. That's completely reprehensible.
Yeah, and he makes a cartoon of him flying a plane, dumping crap on people. Mueller dies. He says, "I'm glad. It makes me happy that he died." So who's really deranged? I mean, who's losing their grip on reality? I wonder.
That's a shame. All right. Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. Let's get right back to the phones. By the way, the phone lines are open now. If you've been trying to get through for open phones, Rob Nadelson will be joining us at 9, but there's still plenty of time to get open phone calls in. And this one from Rick is next. Rick, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'd like to back up a few years to the time that President Obama raided the banks on the East Coast of all their cash and sent it over to Iran in pallets. The agreement was that the International Atomic Nuclear Regulation Committee or organization was able to
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The agreement was they could go anywhere in Iran, check out any area they wanted, and they wouldn't be hindered. And we hold Iran to a different standard because they hindered them at every junction. They weren't transparent. They wouldn't let them go into certain areas. And instead of putting that money in an escrow account to where we could cut it off, it was the smart thing, I guess, to do, was just to give them the cash all at one time and let them have at her.
And another part of the agreement was that they should not have ballistic missiles to go a certain distance. And I believe, don't hold me on this, I think it was 2,000 miles. Well, during this war, they've fired ballistic missiles to Diego Garcia, which is like almost 4,000 miles, which could hit London, Amsterdam, Rome, any city in the in Europe. And nobody seems to care that or connect the dots. Like, is Iran telling the truth? You have certain callers like, well, you know, Trump's a BS artist and all that. Well, we've been having BS from Iran for, I don't know, 40-some years. So if people would look at just those two things, they would know that Iran's not to be trusted. The leadership has to be eliminated, whether they have a dictatorship or a democracy. But the religious leadership has to be done. It has to be done.
Well, allow me to ask who would be or what would be the entity to make that happen? The people of Iran don't have the arms to do it. And if the United States comes in, we're the bad guy, we're the bully. So who's going to do that?
Well, one caller called up and commented about Dresden. And I think we've proven that we're, up until recently, we've tried not to hit the infrastructure. We've tried to hit nothing but military bases. And I understand that some civilians have been killed. But war now, according to the media, according to pundits, is different than war in, like, say, World War II. War should only last, like, 7 days. No civilians should be killed. Very few combatants should be killed. And that's just simply not war. That's simply just a pipe dream. And war, we have to do what it takes to get the leadership out. Do I know what that, I mean, I don't want to say we have to just destroy the infrastructure to get them out, let the Israelis pick up the pieces and get rid of who's left or whatever. But things will never change in the Middle East until we get that Islamic Republic Guard out of Iran. It just will not change. And we don't know what's going on behind closed doors with the CIA, with Mossad. Rumor is that they've been supplying arms to revolutionary people to overthrow the government. I know that we don't want the Kurds involved, but the Kurds are faunching at the bit in the north to go. They would love nothing more than to have a battle with the Iraqis that are being transported into Iran right now, to basically just kill innocent civilians. That's basically, we don't have boots on ground for, you know, maybe a few Delta Force people, but we don't have boots on ground. They're being sent in to terrorize the citizenship of Iran. And people just have to realize that. It is what it is. And there's no arguing about it. And that's all my comment.
Thank you for the call. We're going to come right back, and Dave is back with another comment. Several other phone lines open. We have about 8 minutes left in our time for open phones. So if there's something you'd like to add or a new topic you'd like to bring up, give us a call, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We'll be back after this quick timeout. Put up on the end of open phones here for this Monday, April 6th, and looks like Dave is back. Dave, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yes, first about the mountain where the supposedly all the nuclear material was. A few days before the bombing, a whole lot of trucks showed up at the entrance of that mountain and stayed there for a while and either unloaded or unloaded something and then departed. About the inspectors, sure, there was problems with the inspectors not getting where they needed to go all the time. But, you know, Trump has said maybe 100 times or 1,000 times, I think, that getting rid of the inspectors was a good thing, that somehow having those inspectors in there somehow made it easier for Iran to get the bombs. And it just doesn't make logical sense to me that inspectors being in there made it easier to be secret about the bomb. I like someone to explain how that could be. Well, I mean, having inspectors was a good thing. Getting rid of them it made us more dangerous for them to be able to do things secretly.
Well, there's some important questions that need to be asked, and maybe you know some of the answers. And first of all, who are the inspectors? Where are they from? Are they going to be from the United Nations? Are they going to, where are they coming from? And what kind of power, what kind of authority will they have in a country like Iran, who does pretty much whatever they want?
Well, he withdrew American inspectors. Those were the American ones. The European ones stayed in for a while until Iran kicked them out much later when all the big troubles started to begin. But yeah, there were American inspectors looking around, and there was firm, even the Europeans, what they were doing had a pretty good eye on how many centrifuges they had and what the equipment was, the material. That was European inspectors doing that. And what we know about their stockpiles come from European inspectors, less from Americans. And we can surmise and guess, but we don't know. There are centrifuges missing that no one knows where they're at. And so I question all that. And I still, there's no answer in how you get rid of a government.
Well, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but do you actually think that the whoever's in charge in Iran might lie and say, you know, here's what's going? I mean, isn't that what they've always done? And just say to heck with you guys, we're going to do whatever we want.
Of course there is lying, but having inspectors there was better than not having them.
That's true.
I mean, that's my point of view, that it made it harder for the Iranians to do what they wanted, not easier. And Trump said opposite. For 100 times he said the opposite, that having inspectors there was worse than not having them. And in reality, when this is all done, we need inspectors back to check on them, to guarantee that they're, or try to guarantee, I should say, that they're not breaking the rules again. And as far as the actual negotiations, it was about nuclear material. It wasn't about missiles. Missiles were left out of the negotiations and needed to be tackled later. But it's just backwards to think that we don't need inspectors in there to check on them. We have Russian inspectors checking on us, checking our facilities, checking where we have bombs. And we have inspectors in Russia, or did, to check their systems. I mean, inspectors are part of the game, and they need to be there.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Just a couple of things here. I was just looking at a wrap-up of what's going on up there or in that part of the world. President Trump has not signed off on a proposal drafted by countries calling for a 45-day ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. I'm just reading this right off the prompter. A White House official said that Iran has rejected a temporary ceasefire and said it has formulated a response to U.S. demands to end the war. And it says here, Trump appeared to set a deadline of tomorrow for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. And Iran said the consequences of infrastructure attacks will, quote, stretch beyond the region. And Trump will hold a news conference today about the dramatic rescue of that F-15 crew member whose jet was downed over Iran. So, yeah. Dick, what do you got there, bud?
I got nothing, but okay. I'm just finishing up a gas prices story, and Dahan from Gas Buddy is, you know, he's keep mentioning the Strait of Hormuz as well, and he says at this point the trajectory of fuel prices remain highly uncertain and is largely contingent on the reopening of it. So he said until that occurs, the risk of further increases remains firmly in place. And, you know, gas prices in Missoula have gone up over $1 in 5 weeks.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's getting hit everywhere. So
anyway, so that's going to do it for this hour. Next hour, ladies and gentlemen, one of our favorite guests, one of our original guests on Talkback for many, many years, Rob Nadelson, will be joining us from the Independence Institute in Denver. And, of course, he'll be taking phone calls as well. So we'll be back after the top of the hour.
This is Talkback, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM.
KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Good morning once again, everyone. It's hour number two of Talkback for this Monday, April 6th. Talkback this morning brought to you by Gomer's Diesel Incorporated. Diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Call 728-7620 for Gomer's. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. For a free estimate, call Busy Bees at 550-3219. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call Bruckner's at 541-9097. Quality Seamless Gutters offers expert gutter installation and repair. Call Quality Seamless Gutters for a free quote, 728-4002. And by Y-West Storage, secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit at Y-West, call 510-0590.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Okay, we are back, and one of our favorite and one of our original guests on TalkBack over the years, our good friend Rob Nadelson is joining us from the Independence Institute. Good morning, Rob. How are you, sir?
Good morning, dear friends, Peter and Nick. How are you?
And we are
good morning,
doing
audience.
We're doing great. And Nick is on the phone with numerous folks who are already lined up to wait to visit with you. But I know one of the things we like to do with is to distinguish guests and regular guests like you is the first full segment we want to give to you to lay, if you would, set the table on the things you'd like to talk about today, sir.
Well, this won't take long because I'm not doing much.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I had the pleasure of traveling to Missoula and Helena in latter part of March. Spoke to the Missoula Pachyderm Club and to the Helena, Lewis, and Clark County Lincoln Day Dinner. Had a great time. Had a great time touring the Capitol with the Secretary of the Senate. And more recently, of course, I've been tracking the Supreme Court because the end of their term is narrowing, is approaching. By that, I mean the U.S. Supreme Court. In addition, the Mountain States Policy Center is currently doing the final edit of my lengthy issue paper on why Montanans should consider a constitutional convention when the question is on the ballot in 2030. Of course, we mean a state constitutional convention. And then I'm finishing up right now a paper for the Epoch Times on a case which I hope we'll talk about today, which is Childs versus Salazar, in which the Supreme Court, for the third time in recent years, slapped down Colorado progressive authoritarians who were determined to restrict the speech of people they don't like. And a fascinating case, 8-1 decision.
Wow.
Only Justice Jackson dissented. And so we can talk about that if you like.
Sounds good. So shall we go ahead and take some calls? Or should we take the break now, Rick? Nick, what do you think? Let's get a call in. All right. Skip has been waiting the longest. He's always first in line to talk with Rob Nadelson. So, Skip, good morning. You're on with Mr. Nadelson. Go ahead.
Hi, Skip. It was good to see you in Missoula on March 20th.
And thank you, sir. It was wonderful to see you. Anybody that gets a chance to go and see Rob in person and listen to him and just ask questions right to him. And by the way, sir, I don't know how you do it, but you're like, last time I saw you in person and talked to you was like 2.5 or 3 years ago. You look like 15 years younger. So give us your formula because you're doing great. So,
well, thank you, Skip. I mean, several people made that comment. But you can believe that I feel all of my years and more inside. No matter what superficial appearances may appear to be.
Well, you were just, it was just amazing to you made everybody feel refreshed and enlightened and worthwhile getting involved with all of the things and learning about all the things that you tell us about. So I wanted to ask you, in addition to the a possible constitutional convention for the state of Montana, and for and also all the things that you've been addressing for almost a year when we talked to you a little bit more and more, especially with the policy center that you're involved with, having to do with the soap opera of our Supreme Court, Something else that's going to be coming up is maybe 3 or 4 years from now when it finalizes, is any kind of redistricting again. So I'm curious, could you explain to us what do we have to do to have a better system when it comes to redistricting in this state, rather than this silly little thing that happens every time where there's two Republicans and two Democrats and a tiebreaker who always seems to be leaning left in our redistricting process.
You know,
is there something
Skip, you know,
to straighten the system out?
Thanks, Skip.
Skip, the redistricting process is a classic case of how professional politicians, especially those leaning to the left, take a problem, a purport to solve it, and make it worse. The problem involved was the fact that the legislature, which traditionally has control over districting for itself and for congressional districts, was engaged in partisan gerrymandering. Surprise, surprise. Gerrymandering goes back many, many years. It takes its name from Elbridge Gerry, although it's spelled Gerry, it's pronounced Gerry, who at the time was governor of Massachusetts, and who signed a bill that included districts that were so weird that one of them looked like a salamander. So they called it a gerrymander, or today gerrymander. That's been going on for a very long time. The alleged solution was worse. The alleged solution was to take it out of the hands of the elected representatives and give it to a, quote, independent commission. Now, what independent commissions do is almost invariably kind of represent establishment views, the views of the deep state, so to speak. And that's what happened in this case. The independent commission is not responsible to the voters, as the legislature is. And so the way it was set up is it would have two members from each of the two major political parties, thereby, of course, effectively freezing out all the other political parties, Libertarian and so forth. And then those folks would try to come up with a fifth person, a tie-breaking person. Of course, they were never able to do so. And so in that case, the Montana Supreme Court applies the fifth person. And since the Montana Supreme Court, as a result of the brainstorm of the same people who created this mess, is, quote, nonpartisan, meaning that its partisanship is hidden, it invariably appointed Democrats, sometimes very activist Democrats. And so you had an effective split on the commission of 3-2. So the way to handle it procedurally is for it to be on the menu of the Constitutional Convention. The Constitutional Convention is going to have to deal with this system and come up with something that hopefully is not as subject to gerrymandering as the old system was, but hopefully is better than what the new system is. I don't envy them that task, but it's a very important one.
And with that, we are up against a break. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Our guest on the phone, Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, and Joe and Steve are both waiting very patiently. We'll get to your calls here in a moment. And, of course, several other phone lines open. If you want to get on the queue and have a chance to talk with Rob, that number, again, is 721-1290. We'll be right back.
Cold and flu.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Partly sunny today with a high into the low 70s and light winds. Tonight we'll see partly cloudy skies and lows dropping to about 40. Tuesday looks to be mostly sunny but noticeably breezy. Winds picking up and shifting out of the west to about 20 miles per hour. We could see some gust up to about 36. Tuesday night stays partly cloudy. Those winds will ease off late and we'll see lows down around freezing. From there it's a sunny stretch near 58 Wednesday, 62 and sunny on Thursday.
Okay, we're back on Talk Back. Again, privileged to have with us Rob Nadelson, Professor Rob Nadelson with the Independence Institute, and the phone lines are lighting up, so Joe is first. Joe, good morning, sir. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I've got three or four things, but I hope it's not too much, but you can answer whatever you want. And, you know, John Tester gave us Ketanji Jackson. Can she be impeached? And secondly, Joe DeGeneva, who's an attorney, who appears on Newsmax, said good riddance to Pam Bondi,
because he claims she interfered in a case that he was involved in Florida, which was a lawfare case, and she let the statutes of limitations run on him. And, of course, you know, I'm very interested in the birthright citizenship arguments. And I guess that's a handful right there. But okay. If you could leave me on so I can hear the answers.
All right. Thank you for the call. Go ahead, Rob,
what
please.
What was the question regarding Ketanji Brown Jackson?
What? Yeah, if you could clarify that for us.
Yeah, can she be impeached? Can the Supreme Court justice be impeached?
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, theoretically, it could happen. Practically, it's not going to. Also, I don't think it would be right to do so. The a number of years ago, I did a study trying to find out what the Constitution meant by high misdemeanors. As you know, the Constitution permits impeachment in cases of treason, bribery, other high crimes, and misdemeanors. And the question was bandied around for many, many years as to what high misdemeanors meant. Some people claimed it meant anything that the Congress decided it meant. I went into the 18th century law books and found that it had a very clear meaning, and that was that it was a crime, a very serious crime, that did not rise to the level where the person was subject to capital punishment. So poor decision-making doesn't quite comply with the standard for high misdemeanor, and she certainly has not been guilty of bribery or other crimes or treason, as far as I know. I'm going to pass on Pam Bondi. I don't really have a dog in that fight. Birthright citizenship. The traditional view of birthright citizenship that most administrations have adopted previous to the Trump administration has been that anyone born in the country is a citizen, full stop, end of discussion. The 14th Amendment controls this issue, and the 14th Amendment says that anyone who was born within the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof is a citizen. So the 14th Amendment requires more than just being born in the United States. It also requires being subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And that apparently doesn't just mean within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States, because then the word subject to the jurisdiction would simply be superfluous. So the argument really at the Supreme Court is over the issue of whether of what subject to the jurisdiction means. The Trump administration has taken the position that a person is born subject to the jurisdiction of the United States only if he's born of a citizen or of somebody who has been admitted to permanent domicile, permanent residence in the United States. And obviously that conflicts with the traditional view that anybody born in the United States is a birthright citizen. I actually spent a lot of time digging through the applicable cases and the law behind the cases during 2024 and 2025. And I came to the conclusion, which is somewhat in between that of the traditional view and the Trump administration, which is that a person is born subject to the jurisdiction of the United States if he is born subject to the, quote, allegiance, subject to allegiance to the United States. And that is a technical term. I won't go into all the details of it, but what it boils down to is that a child is born subject to the jurisdiction of the United States if he's born of United States citizens, okay, or if he's born of people who are permanent residents of the United States, aliens, but permanent residents. So far, the Trump administration has it right. That a person is not born subject to the allegiance to the United States or subject to the jurisdiction if he's born of a person who's come into the country illegally or stayed here illegally. However, where I disagreed with the Trump administration was that I believe that if a person comes here legally as a visitor and happens to have a child here, I believe that person is a natural born citizen. And again,
can I add one thing?
No, yeah, okay. You can't. No, you can't. Thanks for the call. Hey, with that, we're up against a break. Steve and Jeff and Dave are all standing by to visit with you. We're going to come right back. Rob Nadelson is our guest on the phone. We'll be right back after this.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. Montana's gas prices take another hike in recent days, although AAA Montana reporting the statewide average is less than a dime higher than last week, averaging $3.78 per gallon. But if you need premium or diesel, you're paying considerably more. A gallon of premium is now $4.34 a gallon, $4.88 for diesel in Montana. Montana Senator Tim Sheehy says Congress and the Trump administration are watching the impacts on agriculture from the Iranian war as fuel prices spike and fertilizer has jumped a few hundred dollars a ton in recent weeks. But he says Washington will be ready to jump in with additional assistance for producers if that's needed, saying the administration's overall energy policy will be beneficial in the long run.
This latest campaign is probably going to carry on another few weeks. There'll be some pinch points at the pump, but long term, this is the right answer for America, and it's going to bring our energy prices down long term. For not just our producers and our ag space, but for Americans coast to coast.
Meanwhile, Senator Steve Daines agrees, saying America's energy independence puts us in a much stronger position than during the gas crunch in 1973.
But this is a spike that is going to come back down. And once the Middle East stabilizes, you're going to see oil prices reaching lower, much lower levels. I think it could be a few months before we get there. But I tell you what, this is something that had to be done for the sake of ensuring we've got peace and stability in the Middle East.
The man who could take over leadership at the University of Montana will be on campus today and tomorrow, meeting with staff, students, and community leaders. Dr. Jeremiah Shin is currently the interim president at Boise State and emerged as a finalist from the list of what Montana Commissioner of Higher Education Clayton Christensen calls a range of strong applicants. There's a public forum on the third floor of the University Center this afternoon in Missoula. That'll start at 3:30 p.m. There'll be a reception to follow at 5 p.m.
For more on these stories and others around Montana, download the Montana State News app.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
When faced with complex challenges, there are people who come together to solve problems and transform lives. That's us. We are Rotary. We work with community partners to build green spaces for all to connect with nature and each other. We support local youth through mentorship and literacy programs. We're committed to causes that improve lives everywhere. Learn more at rotary.org/action.
We are back on Talkback. Our special guest on the phone, Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute. Folks have been waiting on the line, and Steve, I believe, is standing by. Steve?
I think Rob wanted to finish his answer.
Oh, Rob, I'm so sorry, Rob. You wanted to finish your answer. Thank you. Please, go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
Memory fading there, Peter?
What? Yes. Thanks. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to finish by saying that this whole issue of birthright citizenship is complicated by the fact that the 14th Amendment is not well drafted. And the background of the 14th Amendment, the statements that were made on this issue are conflicting. There is no absolute legally certain answer. The conclusion that I gave you is based upon the best research that I could do and the most unbiased research I could do. And that conclusion, again, was that if a child is born of citizens or of aliens legally in the country, the child is natural born. If the person is born of people who are illegally in the country, the person is not natural born. That's based upon the very best job I could do. I have no idea what the Supreme Court is going to do with this one.
All right. Let's get another call on. I believe Steve is next. Steve, thanks for holding. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please, sir.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Steve.
Hey, quick question for you. Given what you're seeing right now with this buffoon of a president we have who lost his first term to someone incapable of putting one word in front of the other, and seeing the results of that, I mean, you mentioned Ketanji Brown Jackson, and the caller before mentioned Tester gave us her. I would argue Trump gave us that moron. Well, she's the right color and has a vagina, so she's clearly, head and shoulders above any other judge that might have qualified for that position. But nonetheless, I blame Trump. I blame his lack of strategic thinking. I blame his inability to pick people, to surround himself with people that aren't reality show-esque type individuals, that are not serious about what they do and capable in how they do it. I'm sure everyone who calls into this show, Rob, will disagree with me. I, however, am different than most callers into this show. I'm quite a bit younger. I actually have a job and have to deliver income to support my family, unlike most of the retirees calling in here every day. And I don't mean that as a slant, but what I mean by it is that these folks tend to vote for these same crony Republican people who clearly do not have our nation's best interest in mind. They claim America first and wanting to prioritize, you know, the hardworking American citizen. But at every turn, we see them do the opposite. I'm curious. I think a lot of people will agree with me that Trump was put back into power because of the younger voter in this last election cycle, Rob. And I deeply believe that at the midterms, the younger voters will not show up. They feel duped. They feel like it's just the same old, same old, and that they're screwed no matter who they vote for. Their best interests are not the priority. In this case, it's the priority of Israel's best interest and others. I'm curious, my question to you, sir, with that background is, given, you know, the disastrous outcomes of losing the last presidential election as an example and getting a moron like Ketanji Brown Jackson on the Supreme Court bench forever, what if the Republicans lose the midterms in both houses, as I suspect they will, given the background I just shared with you, what should we expect as outcomes? And I'd like you to pontificate on that a little bit. You know, where do you see us being hurt by the buffoonery going on right now? And the direction.
Time to answer the question, okay?
Thanks for the call.
This is a political, it's not a constitutional question. And I do have some background in politics. I can't quite comment with the same expertise. It's no secret that in 2016, Donald Trump was not my first choice for president. My first choice for president was Marco Rubio. And nor was he my first choice for president in 2020, that was Ron DeSantis. In 2024, that was Ron DeSantis. I have changed my views somewhat on Trump, and I think that there's a precise moment of time in which I did it. And that was the time when the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania, where he stood up and chanted, fight, fight, fight. And I realized that this is a guy who cares very deeply about the country, who cares very deeply about doing the right thing, and is not, and is brave. I compared it to an incident in which Bill Clinton thought there might have been a gunshot, and he instantly flinched and dived down like a coward. It's not that I thought that he was the best choice for president, but my opinion of him changed dramatically for the better since that time. I also made the comment in 2016 on this show as other places that the presidency is no place for trading on the job. You don't put someone in the presidency who's never held political or military office before. And I think that that advice was roundly validated by Trump's first term. On the other hand, it was also validated by the far better performance in his second term. The people he has surrounded with himself, I disagree with the caller in this, I think generally have been quite good. As to what happens in the midterm, I can't really predict that. I think that the information we get goes through the left-wing media, and they tend to exaggerate every bit of bad news that applies to Trump or Republicans, and exaggerate every bit of good news that applies to Democrats. I saw a major splash the other day on Google News. It was like the head story. What was it? Well, some Democrat state legislator won in Florida. You know, I mean,
this is the kind of their operation. So I can't based on that predict the midterms. But I also think that there are a lot of very good Republican candidates for 2028, and we see some of them in the Trump administration.
All right. With that, we're up against a break. We're going to come right back. Jeff, Dave, and Elena are all waiting to visit with you. Hey, Rob Nadelson joining us on the phone, and there are still a couple of phone lines open. If you'd like to get in the queue, give us a call at 721-1290. We're coming right back.
Looking up.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Our special guest is Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute. Jeff has been waiting the longest. So, Jeff, good morning and thank you.
Hey, good morning, Rob. Good to talk with you again. Always a pleasure. Before I get to my questions, I want to just respond to the previous caller with a paraphrase of how Ronald Reagan responded to Mondale. Back in 1984, and I'm not going to let previous callers' youth and inexperience get in the way of my opinion. So,
what he said was that he was debating Mondale, and one of the questions was whether Reagan was too old for the job because he had seemed kind of vague in the first debate. And so, when the question comes up, he says, "I want to make one thing clear. On this question of age, I refuse to use my opponent's youth and inexperience against him." And I recently saw the video clip of that, and Mondale himself was cracking up.
Oh yeah, it was funny.
It was quite a moment.
Yeah. So that's my reply. Two quick questions, though. First of all, the Trump administration recently denaturalized several citizens that it had naturalized because of things they had lied about, I guess, in their application, which brings up a question to me. Obviously, we could denaturalize somebody who's naturalized, but is there a process for getting rid of the citizenship of someone who is born a citizen? And then my second question is more of a, I guess, less serious, but kind of interesting thing that Ketanji Brown Jackson is clearly not the most intellectual person ever elected to the Supreme Court. She is, in fact, a lightweight, and people not only on the conservative side of the court, but even on the liberal, like Elena Kagan, have smacked her down in opinions. And is there any scuttlebutt on the court as to kind of how the people on the other members of the justices view her? And her performance, and is there any chance that she will just resign?
You know, I don't know of scuttlebutt, but it is true that you pointed out the example of Elena Kagan smacking her down. Of course, Amy Coney Barrett was even more decisive a few months ago. There are precedents where a justice has simply lived beyond his usefulness. He's not sharp anymore. The classic case was Hugo Black, who was on the court into his 90s. And the Chief Justice called a little meeting, and with all the justices present, they basically said to him, "Time to resign." If they do that to Ketanji Brown Jackson, she's got no obligation to resign, but under those circumstances, gosh, I'd hate to be in that position. I mean, you wouldn't want a court where all of your colleagues, want you out. Now, I don't know if she's that bad. I mean, sometimes she writes opinions that seem to be pretty eloquent, including some unanimous opinions. But all I can say is we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. What about the de-citizenizing?
Yeah, this an area is kind of outside my wheelhouse. There are laws that whereby you can forfeit your citizenship. A great example would be if you are an American citizen but you pledge allegiance to a foreign power, you can lose your citizenship for that. Otherwise, I'm not familiar if there are other procedures. I don't think there is a procedure for removing the citizenship of someone who
was born here of an illegal alien simply because he was born of an illegal alien, nor do I think that the standards are easier to lose your citizenship if you're in that situation. That's one of the difficulties with the traditional view that, you know, if you just happen to be here at the moment of birth, you're suddenly a citizen. I mean, that's led to this industry of tourism, whereby mothers come just to bear their citizenship, their children here. It's a very good reason for tightening up the standard.
Yeah, I'm amazed at the number of Chinese who are American citizens simply because they were born here. They still live in China and they're raised Chinese, members of the Communist Party, but they're American citizens and will have all the full privileges and rights thereof.
So yeah.
It's kind of disconcerting.
I don't know of any other country in the world that allows that, and I don't see why it should be allowed in the United States. I also think that's a bad reading of the 14th Amendment. While there's no perfect reading of the 14th Amendment's birthright citizenship provision, I think the very worst one, the very worst reading, is the reading that if you were born in the United States, period, that's enough, because it just disregards those additional words in the 14th Amendment that you have to be subject to the jurisdiction of the United States as well as being born here.
So I guess we can expect to see the current Supreme Court try to apply the wisdom of Solomon and split the baby on this decision?
Yeah, I have no idea what they'll do.
Yeah, thanks.
Jeff, thank you for the call. We're going to take a quick break. Come right back. Dave, Elena, and Harry are all waiting to visit with you. Professor Nadelson, Rob Nadelson joining us. We're going to come right back after this. Hey, Peter, Christians are lighting up for Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, and Dave has been waiting the longest. Dave, good morning. You're on Talk Back with Rob. Go ahead.
Yes, from my study of history, the Founding Fathers spent months arguing over every word in the Constitution. And I would appreciate it if you wouldn't add words to the Constitution. High crimes and misdemeanors, not high crimes and high misdemeanors. That word is not in the Constitution. And I appreciate it if you stop saying it is. As far as experts on the Constitution, there are experts who disagree with what your opinions, I assume, and I know you say you're right, but they have their opinions too.
All right. Okay. Rob, please go ahead.
Yeah, I should clarify. I actually stated the phrase both ways. I said high crimes and misdemeanors, and then I said high misdemeanors. And the reason I did that is because the founding era evidence is decisive, and everybody admits it. On this issue, there really is not a disagreement that the adjective high doesn't only modify crimes, it also modifies misdemeanors. So it is high misdemeanors. And we now have, previous to the study I did a few years ago, nobody had really looked, well, with one partial exception, nobody had really looked into the 18th century law to see if there was a term, high misdemeanors, and what it meant. Well, there is, and we now know what it is. And I've not seen any scholar try to rebut my paper since it's been written.
All right, let's get Elena on the phone. Elena, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Hi, Elena.
I have two comments. Regarding the 14th Amendment, I agree. We've got to take a wait and see. But when it was written, I kind of go a step further. It really had to do with the slaves because they were property prior to the war of Northern aggression. And then something had to happen with them. So, and we have to go back to the original Constitution. And the majority of framers made it clear that it was not a living document. And that's what I look at the 14th Amendment evolving through court decisions.
I'm sorry, you say they made it clear it was not a what?
It was not a living document.
Oh.
Okay. And to my second comment, Rob, you and I definitely don't agree on a federal Article 5 convention, but I do agree with you on a state convention. The 1972 Constitution for Montana does need a lot of review. So I agree with you on that one.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thanks, Elena.
Elena, on the first point on the 14th Amendment, you're right that the 14th Amendment was largely drafted to basically protect the newly freed slaves from state oppression. However, that's not quite true about the part of the 14th Amendment that governs birthright citizenship. The citizenship clause that a person is a citizen if born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that was designed to deal with the Dred Scott decision. The Dred Scott decision was not about slavery per se. The Dred Scott decision held that an African American, including a free African American, even a free African American born free, could never be a citizen of the United States. So the citizenship clause was designed to reverse that. It wasn't about slavery per se.
And Rob, I remember.
As to whether the Constitution is a living document, the answer is mostly no, but partially yes, because there are parts of the Constitution that are deliberately written to take into account evolving circumstances. The founders knew how to, as Dave said, the framers agonized over almost all of these words. They knew how to write a clause that was fixed and unchangeable. They also knew how to write a clause that had some flexibility, and they knew how to write a clause that was flexible and could deal with changing circumstances. So it depends on the provision of the Constitution you're dealing with.
Okay, Rob, I just want to say two other things. You're right. However, the Constitution, at the time it was written, anybody could understand it. People with an eighth grade education. It's when, I'm sorry, the attorneys got involved with their legalese.
The reason most people could understand the Constitution at the time it was written is that the populace in those days was unusually educated in legal matters.
Bingo.
Edmund Burke, the great parliamentarian in England, made the comment that practically every American was a little attorney. they all knew about law.
And also, if you recall, coming from New York, just like I did, they stopped teaching Latin in school. When I entered Evander High School, I was all intent on taking Latin, and guess what? They did away with it.
Right.
I just want to make one other statement. A long time ago, I brought this case to your attention, Yick Woe versus Hopkins. And,
right,
quote, the court explains that while sovereign power is the source of law and not subject to it, in the American system, this sovereignty resides with the people, not the government agency, ensuring laws pervert arbitrary power. End of quote. And I'll leave you there, sir, till next month.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
You.
We got time to get another call. Let's do it. Oh, well, let's take our break now. I want to give Harry and Ed plenty of time. And coming up, we've flown through this hour with Rob Nadelson. We appreciate his time. We're going to come right back after this 1 minute timeout.
Check out the news.
Welcome back to Talk Back. Rob Nadelson, our special guest for another 8 minutes or so. And let's get some more calls in. Harry has been waiting. Harry, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Rob. Yeah, this 14th Amendment, I think that, well, there are adding words to it. I mean, they say, well, you know, like Lane is saying about slavery and all that. I think if they wanted it to be that narrow, they would have put it in the terms would be in there. They said this covers only this. So, I mean, the fact that they didn't put that in there shows that I think they wanted it to be a broader coverage. But also, you keep throwing in allegiance.
By the way, Harry, before you go further, let me respond to that. You're basically correct. I mean, the stimulus for the 14th Amendment was dealing with the freed slaves, protecting the freed slaves, and also protecting African Americans generally. But the language of the 14th Amendment is written in a very broad way. I mean, this is one example of where the Constitution can kind of be a living document. I'm thinking specifically the Equal Protection Clause. Nor shall any state deny any person equal protection of the laws. That's basically trying to import into the Constitution almost kind of a trust law duty of impartiality. It's extraordinarily broadly drafted, and it's certainly not limited in its protection to African Americans.
Yeah. Okay. And but you keep throwing in the allegiance, that which doesn't appear in there. So that's I've heard you say before about the Montana Constitution that they make it an antedated. Well, that sounds like you're trying to make the federal Constitution antedated. Well, this we have to add this into it, add that into it, and the idea that, you know, to determine who is under the jurisdiction. To me, it's very simple. I look at who really isn't under jurisdiction, and that's diplomats. They cannot be arrested from them. They could be kicked out of the country, but they are not, definitely not under the jurisdiction. And that, to me, that shows, you know, really simple that, you know, and other than that, if you people are looking for a reason to not let illegal immigrants or whoever else, we got to dig around and make these things up to try to, you know, no solution, what we want. Now, how do we make the Constitution fit that solution?
Well, Harry, here's why it's difficult, okay? If I were just taking the words subject to the jurisdiction in isolation, I would say, well, what that means is within the territorial boundaries of the United States. But on the other hand, what the Constitution says is within the United States or subject to the jurisdiction thereof, There's a rule of reading legal documents, which is that you try to avoid any clause being superfluous. And so if subject to the jurisdiction thereof simply means within the boundaries of the United States, then that is that would make it superfluous. In addition, during the debates over the 14th Amendment, it was clear that the phrase subject to the jurisdiction thereof had a different meaning. And you're right, it did include the children. It excluded the children of foreign diplomats, but it also excluded others. For example, there was discussion of tribal Indians. At that time, there were a lot of Indians who lived within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States, but their primary allegiance was to their tribe. And that language of allegiance was actually expressly used in the debates over the Constitution. Then there is Supreme Court precedent from the late 19th century that says subject to the jurisdiction means within the allegiance of the United States. And so it becomes complicated fast. And the complication is added by the fact that the people who framed the 14th Amendment seemed to disagree among themselves as to what subject to the jurisdiction meant. And so, as I said, there's no perfect answer here. The best answer, the one I've reached, because I think it is the best answer, is that the children of illegal immigrants are not born subject to the allegiance or subject to the jurisdiction, where foreign visitors, including temporary visitors, are. I'm not 100% comfortable with that answer. But given the historical evidence, given the textual evidence, given the debates over the 14th Amendment, I think it's probably the best answer.
Okay, just real quick then. Make precedent pretty much that they said, I mean, for like 150 years, they said, you born here, you're a citizen, period. I think that's pretty much what the precedent has been set. So, all right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. We tried time to get one more. Let's get one more call in. This is, I believe this is Ed. Ed, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Ed. Yeah, some people say that the United States is the only country that has birthright citizenship. But I looked it up, and there are over 30, including Mexico and Canada. And that's a little intriguing. I'd like to know who came first, the United States with the 14th Amendment, or are these constitutional-like documents that Mexico and Canada have? It's kind of intriguing.
You know, I'm not an expert on Mexican or Canadian law, so I can't tell you really who came first. It might be a close contest between the United States and Canada, and the reason I say that is that prior to, I think it was at 1867, Canada was a dominion of England and would have applied traditional common law rules, and by traditional common law rules, simply being born in the country did not make you a natural born citizen. Maybe that was changed after Canada earned dominion status. If so, it would be a close contest as to whether it was United States or Canada first. Of Mexico, I haven't a clue.
Yeah, neither do I. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Okay, see, Rob, we have about 2.5 minutes left in our time together. So let's talk about what you want to talk about for that time.
Well, I think it would be interesting to talk briefly about the case of Chiles versus Salazar. This is the third time in the last few years that the U.S. Supreme Court has had to slap down the progressive ruling class in Colorado for violating the First Amendment. The first one, of course, was the famous Masterpiece Cake Shop case, where Colorado tried to force a Christian web designer to design cakes for same-sex wedding. The second one was 303 Creative versus Alanis, which was a case where Colorado tried to force a Christian web designer to design websites for same-sex weddings. And in Chiles versus Salazar, the Colorado legislature said, if somebody is transitioning to a different gender, you may help them. If somebody is identifying as homosexual, you may help them. But if somebody wants to transition back to his birth biological sex, you may not help him. Well, as Justice Elena Kagan said in her concurrence, that is a textbook example of unconstitutional viewpoint discrimination. And so the court ruled 8-1 against Colorado. On exactly the same day, a United States district court came out with an opinion striking down another Colorado law, which was an open primary law basically designed to, to destroy the conservative Republican base by allowing liberal independents to vote in Republican Party primaries and in Democratic primaries. And so the court largely invalidated that measure as well. Traditionally, Colorado was a very libertarian state. That has changed dramatically in the last decade and a half. And the people who run the state are pretty authoritarian. Then they continue to get in trouble with the U.S. Supreme Court, as Chiles versus Salazar illustrates.
Rob, we're completely out of time. Any final words for our listeners? We've got about 30 seconds.
Nope, other than to invite people to maybe purchase my book, The Original Constitution. It's on Amazon. Be sure you get the 4th edition.
Got it.
That's the one with a picture of the Constitutional Convention on it.
Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Nick, what's coming up tomorrow, sir?
We'll do open phones for the first half hour, and then we'll have global hotspots with Mirdad Kia and Michael Mayer from 8:30 to 10.
All right, get out and enjoy the sunshine. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 8 for another edition of Talk Back. See you then.